For Tuesday, a big day for Donald Trump. CBS's Aaron Navarro.
For former President Trump, getting as many delegates as he can in the Republican states on Super Tuesday will just get him closer to that threshold needed to essentially claim the Republican nomination.
With more than a third of total delegates on the line, analysts say it could signal the end of Nikki Haley's campaign. Correspondent Major Garrett will be keeping an eye on the number of people protesting President Biden's handling of the war in Gaza with uncommitted or no preference votes.
Their efforts to do that in Minnesota, Massachusetts, Colorado, and California, do they gain any traction?
A new UN report finds reasonable grounds to believe Hamas committed rape and torture during and after the October 7th attack on Israel. Special Envoy Pramila Patton.
This finding does not in any way legitimize further violence, but actually reinforces the need for an urgent ceasefire.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two lawyers who recruited a group of Wisconsin Republicans to be fake presidential electors for Donald Trump in 2020 have settled a lawsuit against them. James Troupas and Kenneth Chesbro turned over more than 1,400 pages of documents as part of the settlement that explains how the two developed and carried out the scheme. Today is Super Tuesday. Voters in 15 states and American Samoa should put President Biden and Donald Trump closer to their party's nominations. Trump spokeswoman Caroline Leavitt on WISN-TV's Upfront.
And that's why we have already shifted gears to focus on the general election in November. So we'll be coming to Wisconsin. We'll be coming to battleground states like Pennsylvania and Michigan in the next several months.
Wisconsin is one of a handful of states expected to decide the winner in November. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Fall Creek community may be getting a bigger public library soon. The Fall Creek Library Board says residents have expressed concerns about the size of the current facility, so the library is working on a proposal for a new, larger building. Currently, the library sits in a village hall, but under the proposal, the new library would be three times as big. The bigger space would allow the library to provide more services to the community, including a free internet connection and computers for the rural community to use. A Chippewa Falls man has been sentenced to 35 years in prison after entering a guilty plea to attempted homicide charges. Joshua Mogo was arrested over a year ago for shooting his ex-girlfriend shortly after two restraining orders had been filed against him. He reportedly told officers that she, quote, got what she deserved after he was arrested on the night of the shooting. Mogo pled guilty to attempted first-degree intentional homicide, burglary, firearm possession by a convicted felon, and violating a restraining order. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers back in action. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After a day off, the Brewers back at it in spring training baseball with a game today against the Giants, then a split doubleheader tomorrow against the Reds and the Guardians. Milwaukee now 3-6 in Cactus League action, but manager Pat Murphy doesn't want to discourage his young players.
I always say, prepare to play good, treat yourself good. Which one do you think's the toughest? Treating yourself good. Kids, they still need help because they'll beat themselves up. They'll put their expectations so high. That's the part, you know.
Hockey, the UW-Madison men's hockey team, getting ready to host the Big Ten playoffs this weekend against Ohio State, the first game Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a win over the Clippers, 113-106. Damian Lillard scored 41 points and talked about how Doc Rivers has helped out at head coach.
When he came in, he was just like, you guys don't run this, you guys don't run that. Like, this is stuff we hated to guard against you.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It is going to be a little warmer today, mostly sunny, up to 47 for a high today. The wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, it'll be clear, our low 27. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 51. Then by Thursday, some sun in the morning, mostly cloudy in the afternoon, 53, with some scattered rain by Thursday night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 22.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwabba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Tune in for a Super Tuesday edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We'll bring you all the electoral results and more 4 to 6 p.m. across the Civic Media Network.
Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the Valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
I'm spoiled, man. I've been spoiled.
Yeah?
Man, it was, what, 48, 50 degrees yesterday, and I was saying, oh, it's cold.
Oh, yes, for sure. But there were some crazy thunderstorms in the evening last night.
Oh, man, it was those storms are storms you would normally have in the summer, right?
Yeah, for
sure.
I
mean, all that lightning, all that thunder. But just the thought of me saying, it's 50 degrees. And the first week of March, it's, man, come on, that's heresy.
Heresy?
Yeah. Well, it's
yeah, it is heresy. That's a very good word.
Sandy Williams, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. The thunderstorms were dramatic.
Yeah, did you, out by you? How bad were they?
They came sweeping through. They scared the bejesus out of my dog. But no, it was it's our weather is definitely going sideways. You know, in terms of some predictable norm, maybe we have a new norm here.
Well, you know, those were summer thunderstorms with all that lightning and thunder.
Still, there's nothing to compare to last week when it was 70 degrees one day and almost an inch of snow that night. That took Wisconsin to a new height, I think.
You know, it just does go to show. Like I said, I'm out yesterday. And it's, I don't know, 48 degrees. Sandy, it's the first week of March. We would, in normal times, we would kill for 48 degrees the first week of March, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
maybe we did.
we would be having a great time. And it's 48 degrees. It's the first week of March. Snow would still be on the ground. Ice would still be there, and so the temperature would be even lower because that snow and ice would be left over from.
So my question is, did March come in like a lion or a lamb, though?
She came in like a lamb.
Really? I mean, wasn't that night of snow? Wasn't that the first?
No.
No.
And she's going to stay that way all the way through.
Lamish.
Yeah, well, you know, why should we even think there should be any difference, Sandy? It's been record-breaking.
Yeah, February came in like a lamb.
Yeah, but it's December.
Yeah.
You know, November. We've had just a great, great run of weather. You know, you see all the vegetation growing around your house?
Yeah, welcome to Asheville.
What was Asheville?
Asheville, North Carolina. You know, it's a climate, you know, sort of a much more moderate climate. That's why people moved to North Carolina.
You know, Sandy, when I see all the vegetation that's coming up, it is normally you'd see that vegetation in April, right? I mean, isn't it a little early?
I'm sure it is. Well, we'll find out. I hope it isn't an ugly surprise for the vegetation.
Well, it's happened before. Trees are budding and all those things. But anyway, we've got an awful lot to talk about this morning with my co-host, Sandy Williams. I want to begin, though, before we get into all those things, our Milwaukee Bucks.
You are decked out. You got a Bucks hat on today.
Yeah. Well, hey, Sandy, our Milwaukee Bucks.
I know. They are definitely beginning to peak, I think, and that's the right thing to do. You know, I think the problem they've had in prior seasons is they peak during the season, win all the games, play to win every game,
right,
and they don't really get themselves tuned up for playoff, okay? So they peak at playoff. And I think this year they might be having that opportunity. You know, they're going to have to be very good to beat the Celtics, but I'll bet the next time they play the Celtics won't be happy with what they run into.
Well, the Celtics are going to owe the Bucks one anyway. The last time they were here, the Bucks beat them by 35. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that.
Yeah, they caught them at a time, so they don't forget. But I will tell you, Sandy, that you and I have watched a lot of basketball. We love basketball in our lives. And the Bucks and what Doc Rivers has done with them, they were a sieve on defense.
Right. Now, I'll bet you if you measure their last 10 games, they probably are right at the top of the league.
Top five.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that bringing in Beverly was such a big deal. I didn't believe that one guy could kind of change.
Well, I think he changed the defensive approach, too. And he changed what they do at transition. Basically, he's making them hustle a lot more at transition than they were, and all of them moving. I think they've gone back to, because, you know, they used to be a very tough defensive team. I think they just lost track of the fact that particularly playoff ball starts on defense.
Well, they were top four under Budenholzer. Yeah. All those times he was here, they were top four. And, you know, the difference, there's a major difference that they had Lopez under Griffith, the coach. He had Lopez out around the key.
Yeah, he needs to be near the rim.
Right, and Doc has moved him back.
I think Doc is maybe very good at analyzing what each player is good at and figuring out how to use that player in that fashion. And he's using players, he's going a little deeper in the bench.
Yes.
More regularly.
And earlier.
Earlier, and he's using people in more particular roles.
You know, Sandy, I'll say this and then we'll move on. We shouldn't be surprised. Doc Rivers has won an NBA championship. He's coached great teams with great players. His resume is long.
Yeah.
Right? He's not some Johnny-come-lately guy. He has a pedigree. He was a great college player. He's a great pro player. So he's a guy who understands basketball in and out, you know. He understands basketball like Sandy understands politics. Oh, I mean,
well, I think he does better than that.
All right, Sandy. We're gonna talk about so many different things. Today is Super Tuesday.
Super. You know, this is. I think there'll be a Marvel comic about this day, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super.
The superheroes and Super Tuesday.
Well, you know, Sandy, historically, Super Tuesdays have always garnered all kind of conversations on all the talking head shows and everywhere. People are always excited. I know I was always excited because you didn't know who. There was always tough competition.
Well, we haven't regularly had two incumbents run against each other, right? And I think you have to treat Donald Trump more like an incumbent than a challenger. He was a president, right? He's got a whole following.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Don't remind
God me bless us all. And he, you know, he was a president and has all that recognition. So it's not really a race to find out who of the unknowns is going to emerge, which is what Super Tuesday used to be. You know, it used to have a slate of 9 or 10 candidates, and maybe you'd have 8 by Super Tuesday, and at the end of Super Tuesday, you'd be down to 3.
Right.
Right? Well, now we've really only got a couple of candidates.
You know? So let me ask you, you know, you said Nikki Haley has 35 delegates.
No, no, I think she has a something like 35% of the delegates that have been decided in the Republican Party. At least I heard that. I can't vouch for
it. Does it matter?
I think it does matter. I think that it's altogether possible that several of the states Republican primaries Trump could lose. Massachusetts, some states where the Republicans don't really care because they're going to lose that state in the national election anyway. But there are several states in which Utah is apparently one in which Nikki Haley might do very well.
So in the overall scheme of things, where does that matter? Or why does that matter?
Well, I think if there are some chinks in Trump's armor,
there are.
Well, but I think if they're exposed in that fashion, I think it could make a significant difference.
In what way? I mean,
well, you know, depending on whether if he has the necessary votes to get the nomination before the primary, before the convention, he will get the nomination, unless there's some court action that causes that to be reconsidered. But I'm not sure that he will have the number of delegates necessary to secure the nomination before the convention. So if he doesn't, then the convention, which you and I are going to be at and going to be exciting to watch, could become something exciting to watch.
So, Sandy, are you pretty contented that the Republicans and Donald Trump and all of the support that he's getting, they keep talking about all this great amount of support, but if you look at the percentages of people who call themselves Republicans, he's not getting abroad.
No, he's leaving. I mean, Nikki Haley is revealing that 35-40% of the Republicans are not voting for Donald Trump. And he's winning the primaries, but he's not winning them. He's not sweeping them clean necessarily. And we'll find out today what that case is. If he's not, then it will be more evident at the time of the Republican convention that they're nominating someone who has a not a terribly firm grip on all of the Republicans, which is kind of a death knell for what would happen in the general election. And, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen between now and the convention with respect to the legal actions, particularly the special counsel action associated with the January 6th situation. And, you know, it could be that there would be delegates and states who would decide they want to rethink what their position is at the convention based on those outcomes and basically based on the polls. I mean, you know, it could well be that the polls will expose. I mean, here's the craziness. The Democrats are probably running the one person that Donald Trump has the potential to beat. And the Republicans, by running Trump, will be running the one person who Joe Biden has the potential to beat. So both parties are coming up kind of less than 100% in terms of what they would like, what they would, if they read the polls, could have their druthers, who they would choose.
All right, we've got a lot to talk about this morning when we return. We're going to talk a little bit about how the great wealth transfer, $84 trillion projected, will be changing hands in the near future. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday, that means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. You can join us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
What if there is a murderer walking among us?
Follow the clues. Solve the mystery.
This village really is a place where murder is easy.
Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, a brand new BritBox original series, is streaming now, adding to the largest collection of Agatha Christie, including Miss Marple, Poirot, Why Didn't They Ask Evans, and more.
The whole collection, it is magnificent.
Stream the best of British TV, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
She posted about us just now.
Celebrities can't get enough of Bianna's bespoke skincare line.
She has 147 million followers. How do we monetize?
She needs a social media associate to help her with the hype.
We should repost this. Do we need a hashtag?
Indeed can help her hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
93.5 The Tap.
There you go. This is not a coincidence.
Edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesdays. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. You can join us at any time during the conversation. 844-967-2789. Sandy, money, 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 money.
Money, money.
Yeah, got to have it. I wanted to bring this conversation up. I was, you know, as I was preparing for the show on yesterday, I ran across this this report. How might the great wealth transfer change society? And it's, you know, it's in Kiplinger.
Yeah.
As 84 trillion in assets move from baby boomers to younger generations, we could see a greater emphasis on financial technology and investing based on values. So, Sandy. A projected $84 trillion. My thoughts initially were, this is the major wealth of the wealthiest people, baby boomers, that's going to be transferred. You corrected me and said, no, that's across the board.
No, that's the total wealth held by baby boomers. And, you know, and baby boomers and the silent generation, the parents of the baby boomers, who the two of them together, I think, are calculated to be. And I've read all kinds of different numbers, but it's off the charts, right? $84 trillion. And the question in my mind, you know, there's been a lot of media attention to this, and they've been talking about how it is that soon the millennials will be the wealthiest generation because they're going to inherit all this money. Well, it depends on what percentage of the baby boomers hold a lot of money. And the fact is that it's the top 5% of the baby boomers who hold a substantial percentage of all of that wealth. Just like the wealth in America is held, you know, a huge percentage of it is held by the top 1%. Similarly, a very large percentage of the total wealth held by baby boomers is held by a very small percentage of them. So that a lot of baby boomers don't have that same pile of money. I think that article talks about an average net worth of baby boomers of $1.3 million or something. Well, the average isn't the median, okay? And frequently, these articles get confused between medians and averages, and median is a much more important number. The median is half of the people above the exist above the median, and half are below the median, and the average is almost always materially higher than the median. And so my concern is that there's all this talk about how it is that a large number of millennials are suddenly going to step into a pile of money. And my prediction is that it's going to be a much smaller percentage of them that step into a pile of money, and the rest of them are probably going to be disappointed when the will is read.
You know, Sandy, I guess the way I saw it initially when I first read the article, before I read the article was that there would be somehow a changing of the way things are now, where that 1% is in that position of power and leadership. But you clearly state,
well, the 1% is going to leave it to their blood relatives, and most of them will do it in a generation skipping basis. And so, yes, a grandparent might have 6 or 7 grandchildren who will ultimately get the fruits of what they leave. But first of all, let's look at the average baby boomer right now. If the average baby boomer has a 1.3 million nest egg, they aren't yet deceased and they have yet to experience long-term care, okay? Long-term care could eat up
no question.
A lot of 1.3 million because when you have money, then you have to pay for your long-term care. If you don't have money, the state will figure out a way to care for you. If you do have money, then you're going to have to use it to care for yourself. So the amount of money that's going to get transferred, I think, has been magnified somewhat. And then the other thing that I think that has been exaggerated is the number of people in these next generations who are going to benefit from it.
You know, Sandy, something else you said that was really interesting to me was the fact that, you know, they're going to skip a generation. The money's not going to be left to the children, but the grandchildren. Explain that.
Well, the typical estate plan is that you want to defer the time when taxes are paid, estate taxes are paid. Now, first of all, the average estate of 1.3 million won't pay any estate tax. So the Kiplinger article was talking about how the estate tax would chew up the state. So I think you have to have about 10 million or 11 million in your estate before you're paying federal estate taxes. But what you typically do is you set up what's called a trust, and the money goes into a trust. The trust is there for the use of the children of the deceased until they die, and then it passes on to the grandchildren. And the grandchildren get the corpus of the trust, and so the actual money is left to the grandchildren. But it can be used usually by children. So, I mean, if you have enough money to leave money that'll make a difference to your children, you probably have a will. If you have a will, you probably have that kind of a will.
So there's not going to be any foreseeable change in the way the society is structured right now, the wealthy. The middle class is going to continue, I guess, based on the way things have been. There's nothing on the horizon that says the what's happening with the middle class is going to somehow change after this wealth transfer.
Well, I don't think so. I think that the Tom, Dick, and Mary that are struggling right now in the middle class, struggling to pay child daycare, struggling to pay for their health, are not people who have wealthy parents who are going to leave them a bunch of money. You know, I just think that these studies are defying reality and are ignoring reality. They're just taking big numbers and trying to impress the reader with what it is that might happen with big numbers like that. But, you know, the fact is that wealthy people leave their money to their wealthy children.
Well, now there are some, Bill Gates and others who have clearly stated that they're going to do something different. They're not going to leave the bulk of...
Hey, the bulk of $150 billion, yes. But they're still going to have, $1 or $2 billion left to leave. No, but I mean, the average family is not giving away its money, okay? The average family in the baby boomer generation is not giving it away. They're leaving it to their children. And, you know, the people that we read about, these immensely wealthy people, are, you know, half of a tiny fraction of a percent of the total population. But as I said, again, they're in that number. All right. So Bill Gates, $150 billion or whatever he's got, is in that.
Right.
$84 trillion. So that's how it skews the average.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the numbers. Tuesday, that means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. News, weather, and sports.
Coming up Tuesday on Matt Nair on Air, Fancy Brian Kelly joins us to kick around the news. In hour number two, all things Wisconsin with the fabulous farm babe Ham Yonke. Don't miss it.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The U.S. Supreme Court is dismissing two lawsuits trying to keep Donald Trump's name off presidential ballots in Wisconsin this year. The justices say only Congress can do that. The Wisconsin lawsuits were part of a nationwide effort to remove Trump from the ballots. They pointed to a provision in the U.S. Constitution banning anyone who's engaged in insurrection from holding federal office. March is National Reading Month. Libraries in Wisconsin are coming up with novel ways to get kids in their doors, including passports that let them check out and return materials in a wide area.
And then you get the kids into the libraries, you get them a book in their hand, and you say, here, you can take this, and then just return it to the next one you go at.
Blaze Burton works for the Mercer Library. He says incentives make reading feel less like a chore. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The identity of the man whose body was pulled from the water in Hudson has now been revealed. According to the Hudson Police Department, 34-year-old Anders Engstrom of Hudson was identified as the man found dead in the water at Lakefront Park over the weekend. He was found around 8:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. Officials say Engstrom appears to have died in an accidental drowning. They say there are no indications of foul play and did not speculate as to what led Engstrom to fall into the water. A reckless homicide case was settled in Burnett County on Friday. Danielle Rodriguez pleaded guilty to second-degree reckless homicide after other charges were dismissed. Rodriguez and Shane Bearhart allegedly snuck a substance containing fentanyl into the county jail, leading to the overdose death of an inmate. Rodriguez was sentenced to 5 years in prison and 7 years of extended supervision and is eligible for an early release if she completes a substance abuse program. The case against Bearhart remains open. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Pete with a 60-second Showbiz Beat. University of Wisconsin-Madison Film Studies professor and scholar David Bordwell passed away on February 29th at the age of 76 due to degenerative lung disease. According to Variety, UW described Bordwell as a prolific film researcher and passionate cinephile. Bordwell taught at the University of Wisconsin from 1973 until his retirement in 2004. The title of Taylor Swift's new album, Tortured Poets Department, is not random. According to a report in the New York Post, the 34-year-old Swift is a descendant of legendary and tortured poet Emily Dickinson. Dickinson was a 19th century poet who wrote over 1,800 poems. Taylor Swift has over 240 songs and dates a guy who can sing the Beastie Boys at a karaoke level just before closing time. Needless to say, Swift has a ways to go if she wants to catch up with Dickinson in regards to verse. She is, however, crushing her cousin when it comes to social media followers. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be a little warmer today, mostly sunny, up to 47 for a high today. The wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, it'll be clear, our low 27. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 51. Then by Thursday, some sun in the morning, mostly cloudy in the afternoon, 53, with some scattered rain by Thursday night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 26.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations filled with mean-spirited rhetoric? It's time to listen and engage. Join the Rational Revolution with me, Chris Alfheim, Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday afternoons at 1 on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5, The Tap, and the Civic Media app.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5, The Tap, and on the Civic Media app. From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
And when I see the sign that points
pass by every day. Just walk away and then you won't see me following back home. The empty sidewalks on my block are not the same. You're not to blame.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, this is in Wisconsin State Journal report. Wisconsin child care can be more expensive than college tuition. Now, you know, Sandy, you've been harping on this for well over a year. Almost going into 2 years, you've been talking about the cost of child care and the impact that it has on the average family, middle-class family, and all, you know, families, not only middle-class, but especially those on a lower structure. And I've heard people constantly say, on the one hand, well, people shouldn't have had kids if they couldn't afford child care.
Well, just, you know, look at the income scale. The lower the income, the more likely it is that both parents have to work to make it. The median family in the United States, the median family in Wisconsin, has two breadwinners. Well, the consequence of having two breadwinners is that if you have children, and we certainly in America don't want our family, certainly our median family, right, our middle income family, we don't want them not to have children. You know, Japan and China have viewed the implication of a shrinking population. That's not what we want. We want our next generations, each one of them, to be primed and robust, and to bring forward, you know, the next great wave of Americans. And so we need to have our middle income families having children. But middle income families have two breadwinners. If you have two breadwinners, when you go to work and you have young children, they need child daycare. And child daycare is very expensive, and it, ironically, it's only in the United States that people experience these kind of costs. Almost every other developed country, the community has decided that child daycare is so important, it's as important as public schools, that it needs to be provided.
You know, Sandy, it's $10,000 to $11,000.
Yeah, per That's child.
A, yes,
per child per year. So, like. You know, when I've worked out the probable budget of middle class Tom, Dick, and Mary in Wisconsin, and now the median income maybe $73,000. If you have 1.5 children, which clearly you don't, you have one or two. But if you have two children, you've got $22,000 on average of cost for your child daycare. Let's say that there's some scale economy, and you can drop two kids off for the price of 1.5. You're at $17,000 a year. This is after tax income. Now, I think there is some tax break for child daycare that can be had at the federal level, but it's modest. And particularly if you're a low tax paying middle income family, the amount that you're going to get in that tax break is going to be minimal. Now, there are child credits that are being talked about, but child credits just are simply cash. And the cash can flow to the family so that they can pay their electric bill. You know, the problem is that there are plenty of bills that stand in line in front of child daycare for the middle-class family, and a tax credit can be helpful, but it doesn't come anywhere near offsetting the cost of $11,000 or $22,000 or $17,000 a year.
You know, Sandy, and our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Love to hear your thoughts on this subject as well as all others. You know, Sandy, when you look at what people, my generation, let me just say, and you're my generation, I worked. My wife, for the most part, was there to raise the children. Until the children got up in age, my father, and I always say, was able to work. My mother stayed home to raise 13 children, for heaven's sakes. Can you imagine?
Well, like we've said, you know, that what's changed in the architecture of the American economy is that the middle-class family the middle class income used to be achieved by one breadwinner in 1970. On the standard, the norm was one breadwinner got you to middle class income, and the other breadwinner, the other spouse, could be home. In today's world, two breadwinners are the norm.
So Sandy, anybody who can't discern that a college education, a 4-year tuition at UWM, a major university in the city of Milwaukee, $11,000-$12,000 daycare for a child is equivalent to that, should tell you something's clearly out of kilter.
Well, it's both out of kilter, and the fact is the child daycare is vitally important. Actually, more important in all likelihood than that college education, because it's been demonstrated that the formative years and the treatment that children get during those early formative years in terms of daycare and in terms of preschool education is vital to how successful they are for the rest of their lives.
So the cost of child care in Wisconsin can eat up as much as a third of a family's income and even surpass what families pay for college tuition, according to a report released Wednesday. The report from Wisconsin County's Association Nonpartisan Research Arm Forward Analytics was released hours before the Republican-controlled legislature refused to take up Democratic Governor Tony Evers' call for relief with these parents. Let's go to David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. Your thoughts?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Really quickly, there was an article from Fortune magazine by Sydney Lake on March 2nd, and she talks about the housing affordability. Buyers today need to make $50,000 more than they did pre-pandemic. And so essentially you have to be making about $106,000 to afford a home in today's market. And what people are not talking about is the fact that inflation is just, you go to the grocery store and you look at the prices as to what
Hey David, I got to interrupt you. We're not talking about inflation. The issue with child care is not inflation.
But what I'm pointing out though in this, what I'm saying is, so Sandy wants another federal program. How are you going to pay for it? You're going to have to increase.
Well, just a minute. Let me just say, I didn't say I wanted another federal program. Actually, daycare could most likely be a local program, just like public schools are a local program. Okay, so you jumped to a conclusion that isn't borne out by my thought process, but people are paying for it anyway. I mean, the fact is that if people are paying $11,000 a year for daycare, if they don't have to pay $11,000 for daycare, but they can pay a considerable amount of money to have some other source of daycare, right? So, I mean, these things aren't just like healthcare. Healthcare is everybody is bearing healthcare insurance costs. If we had Medicare for all, they'd be bearing a different kind of healthcare insurance cost. So the discussion isn't that black and white, Dave.
So you're basically proposing a patchwork kind of an idea at this point is to follow, to try to, do daycare for the average family.
Well, a patchwork? I don't know. Is public schools a patchwork program? I'm not sure. I was pointing out the problem, okay? Now, the solution, my view is the proper solution is undoubtedly that it would be handled by local communities who would organize themselves to provide daycare. Daycare is clearly a local community issue, and local public schools aren't a patchwork.
So on the text line, Tony says, all we have to do is make Amazon and other giant corporations pay more than $0 in taxes. and that covers it.
Well, here's something. Today, as I was driving out here, I'm not a fan of huge deficits. Okay, And my belief is that if we actually funded everything that we did, we would undoubtedly spend less money in our defense, and we would spend more money where Tom, Dick, and Mary want that money to be spent. I think one of the problems is that the Republicans, as much as the Democrats, have relied on deficits to have an undisciplined approach to money, okay? We've had tax reductions at a time when we've had very large deficits. You know, there's always this talk about how the tax reduction is going to pay for itself, but there's not any proof of that, okay? And there's never been a clear proof of that. And the fact is that our deficits became considerably larger after the last round of tax reductions. But I think if we didn't have such large deficits, we would reorder the way we spend our money, and we probably would spend money on daycare, and we wouldn't spend so much money on B-1 bombers.
Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ.
Wow, thank you so much for taking my call. You don't always, but I give you credit today. Well, the mere fact is that inflation kills lower-income people, their livelihood, more than wealthy people. And for another social program, it's going to cause more inflation. So, yes, Sandy points out a problem, but the solution will cause more inflation that hurts lower-income people. So we're living Democrat policies right now. Every day when we go to the grocery store, food is 18% higher.
Well,
even
hey,
if inflation today goes to zero.
CJ, so, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Well, number one, Sandy.
Well, no, here's a couple of issues about all this. We went through a period of a decade, a little more than a decade. It all started with the financial collapse of 2008, where we had essentially no inflation. That was a complete anomaly, all right? The average level of inflation since World War II has approached 3%, okay? And so if you factor that in, then this, you know, the people who are hurt by inflation were hurt by inflation every year from 1950 until 2008. And it is true that inflation is a bigger bite on those people who are living paycheck to paycheck. But the notion that child daycare is a program that is going to result in inflation, whereas a tax cut isn't, is nonsensical, number one. Number two, is public school an inflationary program? I don't think so. And the fact is that child daycare, if were it to be provided, would increase the workforce, okay? And it would make more workers available, and it would probably have a depressing effect on wages, which would be anti-inflationary, and it would improve the situation for employers in America finding the workers that they need.
You know, Sandy, two other things quickly. Number one, inflation is not the reason that child daycare is $10,000. And also, I think when we start talking about as if the last couple of years are the reason and that poor people are the ones we're talking about with child care. This is not poor people who are struggling with the cost of child care, Sandy. It's the middle class.
It's the middle class.
As well.
It's not only the middle class. Actually, you can talk to two income-earning families who are earning $110,000 or $120,000 a year, and the first thing a young married couple will talk about at that income level is the cost of their daycare. No, the architecture of our economy has changed, and that is the problem. It's not inflation. Families, the same families that were living paycheck to paycheck in 2016 are living paycheck to paycheck today.
844-967-2789 is the number. Hang on. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, 540 AM WAUK and 101 FM, the show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show. You need skill and a little luck to play the game of pool, and you could say one cue-making company in Wisconsin has both. Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake is the oldest pool cue maker in the U.S. and remains a family-owned, third-generation operated business. Schmelke started as a one-man shop in the 1940s. Now more than 20 employees work at the facility. So do you know which state has the most cue-making manufacturers? Is it Maryland, Minnesota, Wisconsin? The answer coming up. Pool is an old game, and the cues similar to the ones used to play today were created in the late 1600s in Northern Europe. Pool came to America in the 19th century. So did you guess which state currently has four of the top five cue manufacturers? It is Wisconsin. And Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake has also been inducted into the International Cue Makers Hall of Fame, making this a worldwide slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Return to sender. Return to sender.
I gave a letter to the postman. He put it in his sack. Bright and early next morning, he brought my letter back.
She wrote upon it. Return to sender, address unknown, no such number, no such song. We had a quarrel.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go right back to the phone lines. We're talking about child care and the cost of that and whether or not this is something that our government needs to fix. Let's go to Jack from Racine. Hey, good morning to you, Jack. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Good morning. I had an uncle, happened to be Swedish, who said that you should judge a society on the way they treat their children. And I think we don't come off very well if you do that. I think some of the callers, you know, and Sandy talked about local communities paying for child care along with public education. And I just don't think the tax base is there. You need to have more money. We used to have a lot more money coming in to pay for public education from the state, and that's been reduced and reduced for different levels, including special ed. And so there'd be a whole lot. I think the tax base is something to look at, you know, and you need a bigger area and more secure taxes coming in than the property tax, and along with property tax. That means state income and probably federal. I mean, and when you look at the wealth distribution in this country, it kind of comes back to that. So the folks who don't want government programs, I hope they're all voting for referenda in their local school districts, because that's the only way it's going to get paid for, unless you have more government funding from the people who can afford it the most. What do you think?
Well,
hey, Jack, thank you very much.
Yeah, call, Jack, sir. Thanks. And I agree with you that a local child daycare would need federal funding, okay? And I think there would have to be some federal per capita notion of funding. And what troubles me, actually, is the child daycare credit, which I think ends up going into the hands of people who are so stressed for money that it would have maybe not the potential to be funneled directly into child daycare. So I would just prefer to see a more directed form of federal support for child daycare. I do think child daycare, when it's provided, would be a local function.
On the text line, Tony, regarding child care, my wife and I worked and raised a family during the time my children needed child care. Every last penny of my wife's paycheck went solely to the daycare provider. 12 years of paying child care, and by the way, I was saved by a social program, foster care. I was eventually adopted through foster care, so social programs do work. That's a great testimony, Sandy.
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead.
No, I just think that people shouldn't, even conservatives who don't like government programs should be in favor of child daycare for what it does to the workforce. You know, it definitely provides a more robust workforce into the economy. if that's going to be a sort of a selfish way of looking at it. But I agree with the Swedish analysis, which is how do we treat our children? That's the test for America.
Let's go to John from Boaz. Good morning to you, John. You say what?
Boaz. Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to say let's look at the history of raising children. Like in your dad's, in our dad's generation, it was all right for a woman to stay home and raise 13 children, in your case.
Right.
Because she was cooking all the time, and she just imagined the laundry she had to do.
No question.
And, well, my mother took in ironing for people, but my dad was a school teacher. So when he broke his leg from me taking him down the hill, we had no income. As a school teacher, they don't pay if you don't work, you know. Well, I think that women nowadays wouldn't want to do that, stay home and take care of all those kids. But look at the benefits. She could go across the street and gossip for an hour with her neighbor lady, because she was home too.
Well, we better cut this off while we still have a
station. Oh, John, we're getting on thin ice here.
Yeah, I'm looking at let's go. Let's go to Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. How you doing?
Good morning. That last caller, that was truly funny. I have to tell you, I thoroughly agree with you. It has to be a social program, and it has to be a program in the community. Right now, we are failing. Not only are we failing the children, but we're failing our young parents. And I don't understand, Republicans are complaining that we're not having any children. Well, the reason why we're not having any children, or not me, but those young people are not having children, is because they can't afford it. They have to feed their kids. And I think that we have to look at this, we have to reassess this, and we have to go back to do what's good for our community, and not just what puts money in our pocket.
I think that's very well said, Susan. Thank you very much for the call. Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom.
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, not the corporations, and people need to wake up and realize that. Second, all you have to remember is four letters, H-T-M. Health care, taxes, mortgage, and child care. Each of those things, Sandy said it brilliantly. Sandy, I use it all the time. I don't agree with you all the time, of course, but I do use that very, very much so when I'm talking to anybody. And my question is, as Sandy has said in the past, if each of those things are costing $16,000 a year for the average household, how the hell are we supposed to make it? How the hell are people supposed to make it when it's $64,000? And that's not including their student loans. That's not including food. That's not including anything at that point.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call, Sandy.
Well, Tom and I agree about this. You know, I think that the problem is that politicians need to look at the budget of middle-class America, and they would realize that there needs to be some intervention to change the architecture.
Well, truthfully, President Biden and the Democrats have attempted to try to do this.
Yes.
And they've been stonewalled. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. It means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, 540 AM WAUK. Up next, news, weather, and sports.
Tell a friend what's on tap. There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Tuesday on Nightlight, I welcome entertainment reporter Rob Thomas and sports reporters Jimmy Cuska and Mike Clemens. It's Nightlight with Peach Wabba from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Super Tuesday voters are heading to the polls in more than a dozen states and American Samoa. And it could be make or break time for